Roald Dahl's Danny the Champion of the World, starring Jeremy Irons as William, Robbie Coltrane as Mr. Hazel, special guest star Cyril Cusack, and introducing Samuel Irons as Danny, with music by Stanley Myers and directed by Gavin Miller, voiced by Marston York. In the early misty dawn light of a cool autumn morning, a group of men dressed in tweed hunting jackets and wearing peaked caps take aim and fire at pheasants disturbed from their roosts. Gun dogs retrieve the fallen birds and pile them at their master's feet. Cartridges litter the ground beneath each hunter as the piles of pheasants grow. Wind rustles the leaves of trees on a sun-drenched hillside. A title appears which reads, Somewhere in England, Autumn 1955. Pheasants sit beneath trees in a large estate surrounding a vast country mansion. In the early morning sunshine, the white window frames shine against the red brickwork of the imposing house. In front of the main door, bordered by a wide driveway, is a well-tended lawn. A large man steps out of the porch onto stone steps leading down from the main door. He is dressed in tweed plus fours and matching jacket with a gold waistcoat. A peaked cap sits atop his head, and he looks out over the lawn at the estate where pheasants fill the fields. He nods to himself in smug satisfaction, his ruddy cheeks wobbling with the movement, and steps down towards a large black car in the driveway. The man's large frame barely fits behind the wheel of the car as he drives out along his long driveway. All around, pheasants flap and flutter across the lawn and meadows. Bright white clouds fill the blue sky and a ploughed field stretches away, joining the tree line at the foot of a hill. Nestled at one corner, on a bend in the road, is a small cottage. The large, well-dressed man slowly stops the car and looks out of the open window at the pheasants sitting in the tall grass at the side of the drive. He smiles smugly to himself with a glint in his eye and immediately puts a large cigar in his mouth. Turning back to look at the pheasants, he puffs smoke into the fresh morning air as two gamekeepers walk up to the car.
Morning, sir.
Morning, sir.
The two gamekeepers, each carrying a cocked rifle, watch him with barely concealed disgust as the large man flicks a match out of the window and drives away. They both shake their heads. The English countryside stretches away into the distance through rolling hills dotted with trees and ploughed fields. The large black car drives along the road between tall hedges. It is the only car on the road. Driving along the road through an avenue of tall trees, the black car glints in the dappled morning sunlight. The driver puffs on his cigar and licks his lips, his beady little eyes peering ahead. He pulls into an opening at the side of the road and stops the car at the top of a long, gently sloping ploughed field. Getting out, he stands beside a sign which reads, Property acquired by Hazel Estates Limited. He raises a pair of binoculars to his eyes and focuses his attention on a small huddle of buildings nestling on a corner at the foot of the field and sloping woodland opposite. He twists the viewfinder and the image of the buildings comes closer and more into focus. A car is parked on the road next to a building with a sign reading Garage. A young boy fills the tank with petrol as an elderly man walks around the side of a wooden caravan.
See you soon.
Bye, Doc.
See you soon.
She's full up, Doc.
Oh, yes, good. Now, let's see. Well, Danny, thank you.
I checked the oil.
Oh, you've done? Oh, that's good.
Through his binoculars, the man watches Danny and the doctor walk into the garage, and with a hard expression, he drives down the hill, his eyes determined, staring straight ahead. The car accelerates down the narrow country road, kicking up clouds of dust and leaves. At the garage, Danny sits in a car and turns on the engine. His father, wearing dark brown overalls, listens intently to the engine noise and smiles to himself.
Like a cello. Well, it is.
Can I take her out?
All right.
Where's reverse?
Across and up.
Danny slowly reverses the car out of the garage. Suddenly, the Rolls-Royce screeches round the corner, and with a look of terror, Danny jams his foot on the brake, stopping inches from the oncoming car, which also brakes hard.
You idiot! Why didn't you watch where you...
He stops and stares in disbelief as Danny gets out of the driver's side.
Well done, Dan. Quick thinking.
Afternoon. Teaching your boy to drive, I see. Good idea. Seems like a bright lad. My name's...
Hazel.
Correct. Already famous round here, am I?
Notorious.
Yes, well, that's what I like about the country. Everybody knows everybody. My solicitor sent you a letter.
I replied to it last week.
Yes, well, that's why I wanted to see you in person. I don't know why I bothered with the lawyers, really. Face to face, man to man, that's the way I like to do business.
Dad?
Oh,
He nods to a no-smoking sign.
Ah.
Sorry.
Is there somewhere a little more private we could talk?
This is fine for me.
Yes, well, whatever you say. Let's be frank, you've got me over a barrel, really, haven't you?
Have I?
Yes, well, I knew I was going to have to pay out some money to buy you out. I'm not complaining. Business is business. And I do happen to be a very rich man. I'll give you 2,000 for this place. Yes, that is a lot of money. I'm prepared to put my cards on the table. I've got one of the finest pheasant shoots in England here. I want to make it the tops. I can't do that with you sitting in half a dozen acres slap bang in the middle. Huh? So this is your lucky day.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hazel. I thought I explained in my letter I'm not selling.
He's got quite a head for business, your dad, isn't he? All right. 2,500, but that's my top whack.
Mr. Hazel, it's not for sale. I don't know how to say it more clearly. Come on, Dad, give me the...
Danny and his father go back to work in a concrete pit beneath a car, and his father turns on a light as Mr. Hazel strides over.
How much do you make in this place? Hey? 10, maybe 12 quid a week, if you're lucky. I'm offering you a small fortune. The opportunity of a lifetime. And what about the boy there, eh? Shouldn't you be thinking about his future?
Do you think we should sell Danny?
Danny looks around and shakes his head.
You see, we're happy here.
I think I should warn you. I always get what I want. One way.
No one can have everything they want.
I can.
They watch Mr. Hazel in disgust as he lights a cigar.
Happy here, are you? We'll see about that.
Hazel flicks the still-lit match onto the floor and strides out. That night, Danny's father cleans cutlery in their small wooden caravan, and Danny watches him.
Right now, where do we get to?
Where the big friendly giant and how he could hear things.
Oh, yes. Your mother always loves stories about giants, too. The big friendly giant's sense of hearing was absolutely fantastic. He could hear the tread of a ladybird as she walked across a leaf. He could hear the whispering of ants as they scurried about under the soil, gossiping. See, my love, there's a whole world of sound around us that we can't hear because our ears...
Dad?
What?
That man.
Victor Hazel.
Do you think he's going to do nasty things to us?
Yes, my love, I think he is.
He's a millionaire, isn't he?
Well, he's what we used to call a spiv in the war. While the rest of us were off fighting, he was busy making money out of everyone else's misery.
Is he a crook?
I suppose he is, sort of. But I reckon as how you and I are match enough for him. Thanks, Lou. First day of school tomorrow.
Yeah.
As Danny snuggles under the covers, his father blows out the candle and tucks him in.
She's bought old Wadden small holding.
Danny and his father walk past a sign which two men are hammering into the ground. It reads, Private Property, Hazel Estates Limited. Danny's father shakes his head sadly. A bright red Royal Mail van drives through the main street of the village past the church. A woman crosses the road behind it, pushing a pram, and smiles as Danny and his father walk towards her.
Morning, Mrs. Lipson.
Morning, William. Morning, Danny.
Morning.
Morning.
Morning, Danny.
Coffee, Jane.
Danny, don't forget to give this to Mr. Snoddy. It's his bill for the time.
Okay.
Danny?
Yep. Bye.
See you for tea.
Yep.
In an office in the school, an elderly, white-haired, red-faced man takes a bottle of gin from his coat pocket and sets it on the table. Next to it is a small carafe of water with a glass over it. He takes the glass off it and looks at the clear liquid in the carafe. Picking up a small vase of flowers, he pours some of the water into it and fills the carafe up again with gin. The red-faced, white-haired headmaster staggers slightly as he enters the school assembly hall and stands next to a tall man who sneers haughtily at him. The school chaplain hands a songbook to one of the many children standing in front of him and smiles. The girl smiles back and various children look up at the headmaster and nudge each other, giggling while singing. The headmaster pours a glass of water from his carafe under the haughty, disgusted gaze of the man beside him.
Boys and girls, you've no doubt have noticed a new face here this morning. It's my pleasure to introduce Mr. Lancaster. Captain Lancaster. He'll be taking the senior class. I'm sure you'd all like to give him a warm welcome.
After assembly, Danny takes a letter from his satchel and runs to the headmaster's office. He bursts in and sees the headmaster holding a bottle of gin and puffing on a pipe.
Did you not learn to knock before entering a room, lad?
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't think you were here. My dad told me to give you this letter.
Thank you. I take a wee nip just now and again, you understand?
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, there's no great secret about it. What I mean to say is that nobody knows.
Won't tell, promise.
I'm sure you won't. I'm sure you won't. Off you go then.
Danny carefully opens the door to his classroom and creeps in, motioning for the others to keep quiet. Captain Lancaster stands with his back to the class, writing on the blackboard.
Sorry. You're late.
Danny, sir.
That's your name, boy.
Smith, sir.
Smith. Well, Smith. Do you know, if there's one thing I hate more than a boy who's late, it's a boy who attempts to sneak and creep into my classroom like a nasty little snake. Would you understand?
Yes, sir.
And get to your place at the double. Now, as it's the first day of term, I'm prepared to be lenient. But I want to make one thing very clear. I will not tolerate any breaches of the school rules. Punctuality, order, discipline. That's what I demand. And I know how to get it.
After school, Danny walks along the top of the wall beside his father's garage. He looks over at two men, one of whom slowly gets out of a hole in the ground. Danny watches them quizzically before hurrying on. William sits at a bench by the window in the workshop and watches as two men peer closely at the petrol pump. He sees Danny coming and picks up the small engine parts he has been cleaning. Crossing to the opposite wall, he starts working on an engine as Danny rushes in.
Who are those men, Dad?
Men from the ministry. Some garage owners top up with low-grade fuel in their high-grade tanks. Make a bit more cash. It's an old dodge.
Right, sir, we've finished. If you'd just like to sign here.
Got a blitz on, have you?
Just routine, sir.
No, it's not. A couple of your chaps were here 2 weeks ago.
I don't know anything about that, sir.
Well, you can tell Mr. Victor Hazel from me that he's wasting his time.
I don't know what you're talking about, sir. Afternoon.
How was the first day back, Dan?
All right. There's a horrible new master called Captain Lancaster. Dad, did they really come because of Mr. Hazel?
No doubt about it. And I don't expect they'll be the last.
Yeah, well, of course he knew it was a put-up job. That was the idea. Well, you let me worry about that. Bye.
Victor Hazel puffs on a fat cigar and reaches for the telephone once more.
Hello? Is Councillor Mitchell still there, please?
Putting it through. 409.
Stan, there's something I'd like you to do for me.
In the middle of the night, a single light shines in the doorway of Danny's caravan. Smoke filters out of the chimney, mingling with the fog. Inside, Danny slowly wakes up. He rubs his eyes and listens for a moment before sitting up. Sleepily, he stands up and reaches onto his father's top bunk. It is empty. Yawning, Danny reaches around with growing concern. He looks over at the clock on the windowsill. It is 10 minutes past 11. He pushes open the curtains and looks out of the window into the fog. Opening the top half of the caravan door, he peers outside and opens the bottom half. Turning on a torch, he steps outside. He aims the torch into the trees, peering at the large, shadowy shapes looming through the moonlit fog. He jumps off the steps and walks slowly away from the caravan towards the petrol pumps and workshop. Danny opens the large wooden garage door and stops.
Dad?
Stepping inside, he slowly plays the torchlight over the hulking frames of the old cars. Slowly, he looks around the workshop, probing the darkness with the light from his torch. He steps gingerly forward towards a rectangular hole in the ground and looks down, pointing his torch into the corners. There's nothing there. With mounting fear, Danny races past the petrol pumps towards the stores and shines his light through the window. A strong wind blows through the trees and the old metal petrol sign swings backwards and forwards above him as the young boy walks cautiously out towards the road. He stops at the entrance to the forecourt and looks up and down, peering through the fog. Later, Danny sits at the top of the steps to the caravan. He has a thick blanket drawn around his shoulders. Danny has turned on the gas lamps inside the caravan and one is set beside him on the steps. His head droops slowly forward as sleep overcomes him, but he suddenly jerks upright. Staring with fearful wide eyes into the gloom, he watches the tree line. A shape walks from behind a tree following the line of the road towards the garage. There is nothing menacing about the man's gait, and Danny shrugs off the blanket and runs towards him.
Danny? Danny, what are you doing?
Where have you been? I thought something terrible had happened to you.
Sweetheart. I'm sorry, Danny. I was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. I didn't think you'd wake up. You never do.
Done what, Dad? Where have you been?
I've been up to Hazel's Woods.
But there's miles. Why? Why?
Do you know what poaching is?
You mean catching things?
Yes, well, it's rather more than that, actually. It's going out to the woods in the middle of the night and coming home with a nice fat pheasant for the pot.
But that's stealing!
What? No, it's not.
But it is!
How'd you like a midnight feast, eh? And I will explain to you the mysterious art of poaching. Well, now, once upon a time...
Dad.
Do you want your sausages? Then listen to your old dad. Once upon a time, people who lived in the country were incredibly poor. In fact, some of them were starving. And they were so poor that they had to poach their own food in order to survive.
But that was ages ago.
No, not so long ago. In your grandfather's day. And then, when things got better, people just continued poaching because it's one of the most exciting and difficult sports there is.
But the pheasants still belong to somebody, don't they?
Ah, well, yes. Strictly speaking, I mean, legally, they belong to the person whose land they happen to be on at the time. Now, that's never really bothered anyone round here. Not, of course, until Mr. Smarty Pants Hazel came and bought up all the land. Tea, sir?
It's hot.
Yeah. Oh, I hate organised shoots like Hazel's.
Why?
Because they're unnatural. I mean, they're against nature. Do you know why he's got so many pheasants? Because he buys them as chicks. He puts them in pens. And the keepers feed them like pets. And when they're released, they're practically tame. Then, on the big day of the shoot, an army of beaters crashes through the wood and frightens them all up into the air. And a load of rich idiots who couldn't hit a barn at 50 paces blasts the senses out of them. Well, that's disgusting. That's organized slaughter. Now, poaching, on the other hand, is a quite different matter. It's one man on his own. It's the hunter and his prey. And the pheasants have a chance. I mean, it's not easy to catch a pheasant. And anyway, there's the added spice of the keepers lurking behind the trees with loaded shotguns.
Guns? They wouldn't shoot you, would they?
Well, Hazel's keepers might. But in the old days, they just used to pepper your backside a bit. Your old grandfather had a back tried like a pincushion.
Grandpa was a poacher.
He studied the art of poaching like a scientist. Your grandfather discovered one of the greatest secrets of poaching.
What was that?
time you were in bed, young man.
Oh, Dad, please. I'm all right.
No, Danny, it's a secret.
Please.
Well, I suppose my dad told me so that I should tell you. Pass it on, so to speak. Like a family heirloom. The thing he discovered, Master Daniel, was that pheasants love.
He turns to his son, but Danny is asleep.
Pheasants love raisins. Pheasants love raisins. Pheasants love raisins. Now keep very still. Don't let them see you. If we just stay here a minute. Chickens like raisins too. Not as much as pheasants though. They adore them. My old dad didn't stop there. He thought about it. And one day, the idea hit him. Watch.
The chickens get closer to a paper cone stuck in the ground.
Watch that one.
One of the chickens pecks at it, and the cone sticks over its head.
Gotcha. Come on.
The chicken sits motionless on the ground.
You prod her. Stroke her, go on. Do anything you like to her. She won't move. If she was a pheasant, we could snaffle her right now. See, that's the beauty of it. That's the poetry. It's completely silent. Go on. Sticky hat, my old dad used to call it. And it's a landmark invention. In the history of poaching. Hello, it sounds like business. Come on. Uh-oh.
Who's this? Dad?
A snooty-looking man and woman get out of the car. Both carry briefcases.
Danny, I've got a job for you. But not until I tip you the wink, all right?
Morning.
Oh, morning. Mr. Smith?
Yes?
Name's Hunter. District Council Child Welfare Department. This is my colleague, Mr. Parker.
Housing.
Good morning.
So, Mr. Smith, we've had a...
A report. Yes, I thought you might be getting one.
Oh, did you indeed? Well, we're empowered under Section 3.
If you want to inspect the place, I've no objection. This is the workshop, office, stores.
Living accommodation?
It's round the back. I'd be very happy to show you around.
I see. Well, I'm glad you're adopting a responsible attitude.
William whispers in Danny's ear and then follows the two council workers round the back to the caravan. Danny scratches his head through his woolen cap and wanders into the workshop. He starts collecting tools from the bench while his father shows Miss Hunter and Mr. Parker to the caravan. While they check the living area, measure spaces, peer into nooks and crannies and investigate hygiene, Danny opens the bonnet of Miss Hunter's car and sets to work. William sits on the steps watching as Miss Hunter takes cheese from the outside larder and smells it, nodding. Mr. Parker measures the tin bathtub and William shows them the outside toilet, shooing a chicken off the seat with a wry smile. Mr. Parker keeps measuring.
I've never seen anything like it in my life. A tin tub to wash in, a hole in the ground to... Do you really think this is the proper way to bring up a child in this day and age?
I do, Miss Hunter, in this day and age especially. Look, why don't we discuss this over a cup of tea?
According to our records, you didn't send Danny to school until he was 7 and a half. Now, are you aware of the legal requirement?
Yes, I'm perfectly well aware. But you see, I taught Danny myself.
Oh, I'm afraid that just won't do, Mr. Smith. Law's quite clear. Attendance at a school is compulsory.
unless alternative instruction is provided by a qualified teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am a qualified teacher.
What?
I taught full-time before the war.
Oh. Well, did it never occur to you that Danny might benefit from the companionship of children his own age? What are you doing? How dare you take your hands off my car? This is criminal damage. I shall prosecute. I thought
you sounded a bit rough when you drove up this morning. Do you have trouble starting her in the mornings?
She does.
Points, is it, Danny?
And carburetor.
Uh-huh.
Fuel pump's a bit wonky, too. I can fix it, but it really needs a new one.
All right, Dan. We'll leave you to it.
What?
Your car's in safe hands, Miss Hunter. He does know what he's doing. Come and have a cup of tea. Danny's been tinkering with motor cars since he could walk. Mr. Parker, tea? I suppose he's the best 9-year-old mechanic in the world. I know I should have asked you first, but... Well, I thought it would convince you that he hasn't been wasting his time. You're right, I should have made him go to school earlier, but... My wife died when he was 4 months old. And he was all I had.
Both Miss Hunter and Mr. Parker stop and look at the photograph of Mrs. Smith on a shelf, and Miss Hunter nods.
Fine-looking girl.
They all look at the black-and-white framed portrait, and Mr. Parker crosses to Miss Hunter. Slowly he picks up his tea and sits down opposite her. William remains standing and watches them as they both drink in nervous silence.
Oh, sounds like he's ready for us.
If you'd like to try it.
Bless myself.
Danny, thank you very much. Oh, I'm convinced. And I can assure you, you won't be hearing any more from the council. Danny, you're a lucky boy. You've got the most spiffing father. Ready, Mr. Parker.
I'm probably talking out of turn, Mr. Smith, but if I were you, I'd hang on to this bit of land of yours. Say no more. Mum's the word, eh?
Goodbye, and God bless you both.
William puts an arm around his son, and Danny waves while they watch Miss Hunter and Mr. Parker drive away.
Well done, Dan.
Piece of cake.
Come on, I'll get lost and do those tools. Don't forget them.
Dad?
Yeah?
About last night. You often go out when I'm asleep and I don't know it.
Not since your mother died. I made a vow then. I wouldn't go out poaching until you were old enough to be left alone at night.
I'm old enough now. You can go out whenever you like.
Do you mean that?
As long as you tell me.
Of course I will.
Stan.
Victor here. So what happened then? Oh, he had an answer for everything, did he? No, forget it. Stan, when did I ever forget a favour? Yeah, I suppose that could be arranged. Goodbye. An answer to everything, eh? Well, We'll see about that.
Weasel, Danny. You missed it, went down there. I love weasels. They're such a brave little animal. Do you know that a mother weasel will fight to the death to protect her young? Even against a fox, which is 100 times bigger than her.
100 times bigger. What?
Did you hear that? Come on.
William bends down to firmly hold a rabbit with its back leg caught in a wire snare.
Barbaric. As you know, it drew right through his leg.
William gently tries to untie the trapped back leg.
He'd bite it right off to get out of this. Vile thing. Just what do you expect from Hazel? There you go. Go on, off you go. Go on, go on.
William winds up the loose wire and stands up. He stares angrily at a sign proclaiming Hazel Estates, keep out, by order of V. Hazel.
Dad!
Come on, Dad.
Having looked at his father's pocket watch, Danny rushes off. Captain Lancaster sits at the front of the class marking papers, shaking his head in annoyance. Danny races into the school and stops outside the classroom. Taking a deep breath, he quietly opens the door.
Ah, Smith. Oh, how kind of you to grace us with your presence at last.
I'm sorry, sir. My dad told me to tell you that...
Don't want any of your excuses. You're late, boy. Late! Come here. Now, what did I say about unpunctuality? I said it would be punished, didn't I? 1,000 lines by tomorrow morning. Now get to your place.
After school, Danny clambers through the workshop door and walks disconsolately inside.
Hi, Dad. Hi, Danny. What happened?
I got 1,000 lines.
Well, didn't you explain?
Didn't get a chance to.
He's got it in for you, this Captain Lancaster, hasn't he?
Suppose I better get on with it.
Danny gets up and wanders out. Later, by the light of a gas lamp, Danny sits in the caravan writing out, I must not be late for Captain Lancaster's class. His father comes into the rosy warm glow and smiles adoringly at his son. Hanging a car key on a hook by the door, he looks at Danny.
How's it going?
547 lines to go.
I thought I might go out again tonight. Is that right?
Of course.
I should be back by 9. But don't wait up. Lights out in bed at 8. Promise?
Promise. You will be back.
Of course I will. Unless the keepers catch me. Don't worry, though. They won't. I'll be up in Hazel's woods.
William taps his nose in a gesture of conspiratorial secrecy and leaves. Late that night, Danny wakes up and gets out of bed. He stands up from the lower bunk and looks at his father's place on top. It is empty. With growing anxiety, Danny turns the gas lamp up full and looks at the clock on the windowsill. It is 10 minutes past midnight. Danny opens the caravan door and looks out into the foggy, moonlit night.
Dad? Dad!
Danny looks at the old tree where his dad had come from the last time, but there's no sign of him. Frightened and alone, Danny turns to go back inside the caravan and stops. He thinks for a moment and looks at the car key hanging on a hook just inside the door. Slowly, hesitantly, He reaches out and takes the key from the hook. Still wearing his pajamas, Danny has put on a jumper and his duffel coat. Carrying the torch, he goes to the workshop and turns on the lights. Sure of what he has decided, but still nervous, Danny walks over to the car his dad had been working on. Getting in, the seat and the steering wheel dwarf him. He turns a lever, pulls out the choke, and pushes the starter button. He depresses the clutch and shifts the gear lever. He eases the handbrake off and slowly reverses out of the workshop. Stopping, he depresses the clutch and forces the gear lever into first gear. He slowly turns the car around to face the entrance to the garage and drives slowly towards the road. At the road, he stops and takes his foot off the clutch. The car lurches forward, kangarooing onto the road. Danny peers out into the near total blackness of the road ahead.
Lights.
He twists a knob on the dashboard and switches on the windscreen wipers. He stares at them in surprise and immediately tries another switch. The lights come on, but the car swerves onto the grass verge to his left. As he overcorrects, the lights go out and he slews across to the opposite verge. Fighting to keep the car on the road, he switches the lights on again and runs up onto the left-hand verge once more. Half on and half off the road, he drives forward. His face is a mask of concentration and he pushes through the gears as the car's speed increases, hovering around 25 miles an hour. Somewhere ahead of Danny, a police car drives calmly along the damp road. There are two officers inside. Danny veers all over the road, his headlights shining in a weaving pattern along the narrow country lane. Danny peers ahead, concentrating hard. The police car's headlights shine brightly onto his windscreen and he turns his head away slightly as they shine straight into his eyes. The two cars pass each other, but only just, and Danny keeps going. The police car suddenly screeches to a halt and both officers turn in their seats, staring in surprise at the other car disappearing up the road. Danny continues along the lane, checking the rearview mirror constantly. He is now much more in control of the vehicle and keeps it on a straight course along the middle of the road. Reaching a small incline, Danny's car slows down. Back along the road, the policemen discuss what they saw, still utterly surprised. Danny tries all the gears and the car comes to a dead stop. Slowly, it starts to roll backwards down the slight incline. He hauls on the handbrake and the car stops. The police car accelerates in reverse and quickly turns round. Danny finally gets the engine restarted. Checking his mirrors once more, he slowly starts up the road. Weaving along the road, Danny accelerates. He turns left, following a sign at a fork in the road towards Senborough Vale. The police car also accelerates, but it is still some way behind. Danny wipes his face, nervously brushing hair out of his eyes. The speedometer jumps up and down from 25 to 30 miles an hour and back as Danny races along the road. The police car, although some distance away, is catching up. Danny keeps his foot on the accelerator and struggles to keep the car travelling in a straight line as his speed increases. The police car tears along the road some way behind him, but catching up fast. Growing more and more frightened, Danny starts to turn in his seat, looking back over his shoulder. He turns to the left and then the right, looking for the police car. Rounding a wide bend, Danny looks into the woods for a hiding place. Suddenly, he heaves the steering wheel to the right and trundles down an almost hidden path. He keeps driving until he's fully hidden and turns off the lights in the engine, just as the police car roars round the bend and disappears up the road away from him. Catching his breath, Danny slowly gets out of the car with the torch. He closes the door and peers around the front of the car into the darkness of the surrounding trees. Switching on his torch, he starts walking towards the woods. He stumbles over roots and lumps hidden in the leaves littering the floor. Every strange sound makes him jump in fright and point the torch in the direction of the noise. His eyes wide with fear and concern for his father, he stumbles on through the trees. Suddenly, he sees two torch beams coming towards him and ducks down behind a large tree. Danny's foot suddenly slips.
What was that? Nothing. Come on, let's get on with it. I want to get home. Hazel and his fancy ideas. He doesn't pay us fancy wages, does he?
As the two gamekeepers turn and head back through the trees, Danny breathes a long, silent sigh of relief and clambers from his hiding place. He follows the sound of their voices.
I think we got one.
The two men peer into a pit.
You're right, by God. You're no good to hide your face. We've got you now, me lad. Let's have the bigger out. No, we're going to fetch Hazel. Well, this was his idea. He can take responsibility. We have a pretty good idea how we've got down there. Come on.
Yeah, wait a minute. We can't leave him
Look,
here.
If he could get out, he'd have got out, wouldn't he? Come on.
Danny watches the two men leave and races to the edge of the hole. He shines his torch onto the figure of a man huddled in one corner.
My ankle. I don't know how I can get out.
There's a tow rope in the back of the Austin.
Here? Good boy.
Oh, it's all right for Sylvan.
While the two gamekeepers walk up to Mr. Hazel's house where a party is in full swing, Danny races to the car and grabs the rope from underneath the back seat. His face shining with happiness at finding his father, he turns and rushes back to the hole. The gamekeepers stand on the steps talking with Mr. Hazel, who suddenly nods and calls to his butler. Danny ties one end of the rope around a tree and throws the other end down to his father.
Good boy. That's fine. It's good and secure, Danny.
Hazel and the gamekeeper stride through the woods. Each carries a shotgun and a torch.
Get your arm. Get your arm. Mommy, Danny. Hold it. Get your arm out of my shoe.
Hazel throws his cigar away and lumbers forward with his two keepers as Danny helps to haul his father out of the pit. William grips the rope, pulling himself out, and Danny clings to his jacket. Slowly he rolls over the edge of the pit, holding his injured leg. While Danny and William collect the rope, Hazel and his men break into a run through the trees. William leans heavily on his son's shoulders as they scramble towards the car. Just as they are out of sight, Hazel and his men come out of the trees and stand at the edge of the pit. Hazel shines his torch into the dark hole.
Well, well, well.
I
fools!
I don't understand this.
Get him first.
Well, get after him!
Danny grapples with the gear lever as the wheels spin on the wet earth. The two keepers race towards the engine noise.
Give him a bit more acceleration. Skidding. Okay, give us some gun. Go on. Good boy. Gently out with the touch. That's right. Go on. Keep going.
Breaking free of the mud, Danny reverses out of the woods just in time. The two keepers' torches flicker in the trees as they close in on the car, but they're still too far away.
Yes, I can clutch in. Clutch in.
One of the keepers raises his rifle, but the other flashes a torch in his face and he lowers it.
From the garage, sir. I just know it was.
Of course it was.
Yeah, well, if he tries that again...
He will. Rabbits, I don't have to remind you that you are legally entitled to shoot him on sight. Yes, I want him. I don't care how you get him, just get him. There's 100 quid a piece in it for you when you do.
Oh, sorry. You really ought to take something for the pain, you know.
What shall I do, mate?
Well, we can't be too stoical, you know. Bloody awful, man. Hazel. Oh, sorry, Dan, you didn't hear that. Absolutely appalling. I mean, you could have been killed, you know. Oh, yes, you could. And, good heavens, I was thinking of popping up to the woods myself. One of these nights. Just imagine. Oh, no, it's disgraceful. Utterly, utterly disgraceful.
Morning, William.
Morning, Enoch.
Annie.
Morning.
Morning, Sergeant.
Ooh. You look nasty. Is he broken? We've had a complaint from Mr. Lord God Almighty Hazel.
Oh, yes.
Yes, he's got some idea in his head that you was up in his woods last night poaching his pheasants and that you might have broken your ankle. So I'm afraid I've got to take a statement. Right then. Can you account for your whereabouts last night? The suspect replied that he was at home all night. Now, how do you account for the fact that your ankle is broken? The suspect replied that he broke it accidental, falling down the steps of his caravan.
That will be your ambulance, Doctor.
Don't worry, my love. I'll be back tonight.
Good luck, then.
Danny watches as his father is carried into the ambulance on a stretcher. The door is closed and Danny hops up onto the rear running board and waves at William. His father looks up at him and mouths the words, "Don't worry, I'll be all right." Danny smiles and jumps down as the ambulance drives away. Sergeant Enoch wheels his bike towards the doctor and Danny and they watch the ambulance leave.
Well done, Sergeant. They'll just set the bone, they'll plaster him up, and be as right as rain.
Right, I'll be off now then.
The sergeant cycles away and, without turning round, raises his left hand in a wave. Later that afternoon, with the weather worsening, Danny sorts out the stores, placing components into their specific racks. He hears the car draw up outside. Danny closes the till and puts on his coat as William steps out of the car with his leg in plaster.
Wait, William.
I'm all right, my love. Yeah, a bit woozy.
All right. I
got up at two.
Hazel drives onto the property and a Land Rover follows him in. He gets out and stands in the pouring rain.
I'm getting wet, Rabbits!
Rabbits rushes over from the Land Rover and holds an umbrella over his head as Hazel strides towards Danny, his father and the doctor.
So, we fell down our own stairs, did we?
Now, look here, you listen
no,
to me.
No, you listen to me. Do you think I don't know what's going on here? Do you think I don't know you're all in this together? What'd you take me for?
Morning, you Smith. If you trespass my land again, you're going to get shot.
Who the devil do you think you are? Just because you've got a little bit of money, you think you've got the right to...
Shut up, will you? Do you hear me, Smith?
The moment, Mr. Hazel. You're on my land. You have 1 minute to get off it. Come on, Dr. Turner.
Summons the beggar, sir.
Want to catch him red-handed?
Yes, that's all very well, sir, but he might not try it again.
Of course he will. He won't be able to resist it. You'll risk anything to get even with me. And when we get him, boys, we'll see what he'll take for this precious garage of his.
Later in the caravan, Danny lights a gas lamp at a small table. The doctor knocks back a shot of brandy.
Better.
You know, that fellow, he really ought to be. Yes, he ought to be. Well, he ought to be, oughtn't he?
He will be. I'll see to that.
A lovely tea, Danny. Lovely, thank you very much. And now, William, this is to make you sleep.
Oh, no. No, no, honestly.
Oh, yes, honestly. Straight away, too.
Go on, Dad.
All right, then.
William takes the two small pills and pops them in his mouth. He picks up a tin mug and drinks from it, swallowing the pills, with Danny watching him, smiling playfully. The doctor empties his small glass and puts it down next to a bottle of sleeping pills on the table. At school the next day, Danny and his classmates are taking a test.
Hey, Danny.
You two boys. Stand up. Morgan. Smith. Up. Now. What were you whispering about,
Nothing, sir.
You were cheating.
No, sir.
You were cheating. Come out here, both of you.
Danny and his friend walk slowly and nervously to the front of the classroom while Captain Lancaster picks up a long, thin case from the corner. Placing it on the desk, he opens it and pulls out a long, thin cane. Holding it at both ends, he flexes it.
Your hand.
I was not cheating, sir.
Why is a whisper during exams a cheating, as far as I'm concerned? Hold out your hand. Smith, I haven't finished yet.
Danny slowly turns back towards him, staring at him in pain and terror. Captain Lancaster raises the cane above his head again.
Captain Lancaster! I'd like a word with you. Immediately, if you please.
Mr. Snoddy walks slowly out of the door and Captain Lancaster stares after him for a moment before putting the cane down, buttoning his jacket and following the headmaster out. Tears stream down Danny's face as the other children gather round him. In his office, Mr. Snoddy stares angrily at Captain Lancaster.
Captain Lancaster, I thought I'd made it crystal clear when I appointed you that I will not tolerate any form of corporal punishment in my school.
I was perfectly within my rights. The boys were cheating.
Oh, were they? Were they indeed? All right. Danny, rest of it. Sit down. Try and be good. Nothing. On your word of honour, were either of you cheating just now? Danny?
No, sir.
No? Sydney?
No, sir.
Mr. Snoddy turns away and looks at Captain Lancaster standing in the doorway to the headmaster's office.
Captain Lancaster. If I catch you using the cane ever again in my school, you'll be out in your ear. Is that understood, sir?
Yes, sir.
Good, sir.
Captain Lancaster walks slowly away from the headmaster and stops at the door. He takes a deep breath and enters, shutting the door behind him. After school, Danny clambers through the door to the workshop where his father stands in the pit underneath the car's engine, struggling to undo a nut.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Dan.
Danny hands him another spanner, keeping his right hand hidden in his coat.
Try this one.
What's the matter with your hand?
He points at Danny's hand and then gently takes hold of it, staring with mounting anger at the livid red welt across his son's palm.
Who did this? Who did this, Danny?
Dad.
Was it Lancaster?
Thought me and Sid were cheating.
Cheating? You? Right.
Where are you going?
I'm going to see this Captain Lancaster.
Fred, please don't. Please.
And I'm going to beat the living daylights out of him.
Please don't. It'll only make everything worse.
It'll make him stop and think before he lays a hand on a child again. I guarantee that.
I'll hate you if you do it.
Danny.
You've always taught me to fight my own battles. You've always said...
I'm sorry, Danny. I'm sorry. You're right. I'm all angry inside. When people get like that, it just comes out. I want to get even with Hazel, and I can't.
Danny watches his father limp across the workshop and pick up a tin mug. William drinks from it and turns to his son, his eyes suddenly twinkling.
I had this dream. You know the shooting season starts on Saturday?
Yeah.
Well, they'll all be up there. All be up at Hazel's. All the local bigwigs on the toss down from London. Oh, they don't give a fig for Hazel. But they know his fields will be crawling with pheasants. That's all they care about. But what if it wasn't?
But what if what wasn't?
What if there wasn't a pheasant in sight? Nothing. What if someone had poached the lot? Make him the laughing stock of the county. He'd never show his face around here again.
That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Trouble is, no one could poach
600 or 700 pheasants. It's impossible.
That That night, Danny is making tea, boiling water on the small stove in the caravan. Putting the tin tea leaf container away, he notices the bottle of sleeping pills on the shelf. He picks it up and stares at the label.
And now, William, this is to make you sleep.
Tea on.
Dad? I think I've had an idea.
It's absolutely flabbergasting.
If it works, it would make Danny the all-time champion of the world. Can you give us the stuff?
Yes, well, of course, Major, I think it will require a little planning. Military planning.
Afternoon, Snoddy. Oh, would you be free tomorrow?
Raisins, eh? One bag, do you?
How many have you got?
I don't know. 20 or 30, I suppose.
We'll take the lot.
The shopkeeper stares at William in utter shock. Later, Danny and his father sit at a table in the caravan, pouring raisins into two large tin bowls. Once all the bags of raisins are empty, they pour water over them and leave them to soak. Bottles of sleeping pills litter the table, and William crushes the pills into a powder using a pestle and mortar.
This should just put them to sleep for a day and a night. Then we'll snuff them. Easy as pie.
Danny watches his father grind up the pills and pour the powder into a small mound on the table. The young boy's face is alight with excitement and concentration as his father picks a raisin out of one of the bowls and looks at his son, his eyes twinkling with mischief and anticipation.
Let's have a go.
He places the raisin on the table and picks up a cork with a razor blade stuck into one long side. Carefully, he slits the raisin open, making sure not to cut it all the way through. Using the end of a penknife, William picks up a small amount of powder from the crushed pills and gently tips it into the slit-open raisin. He then picks up a needle and thread and with great care sews the open side of the raisin shut, snipping off the excess thread with a pair of scissors. He holds the raisin between his finger and thumb and slowly moves it under Danny's nose. They both stare at it in expectant wonder.
I think we're going to do it.
They both set to work, slitting the raisins open, pouring in the powder and sewing them closed. As the night wears on, Danny's head droops to the table.
You should go to bed, my love. I've got all tomorrow. I'll close up for the day.
While Danny goes to bed, William continues. He slits, fills and sews the raisins throughout the night. Once each raisin is complete, he puts it in a large brown cloth sack. Much later, he looks over at the sleeping figure of his son lying on the bottom bunk. Only Danny's hand is visible above the covers, and lying on the bed, just out of reach, is an open book.
Come on, Dan, finish that up. I come straight back after school, right? Mm-hmm. If we're not up in the woods by sunset, we'll be too late. Danny! Go on, off you go.
Captain Lancaster paces in front of the class, squeezing open a large bulldog clip and letting it snap closed. Danny's head rests on his desk. On the blackboard stand the words, "Write 2 pages on what I did during the holidays." While the other pupils busily write, Sydney watches the teacher, nudging Danny with his elbow, but Danny is fast asleep. Suddenly, Lancaster sees Danny. Sydney immediately bends his head to his work as the teacher steps towards the sleeping boy and squeezes the bulldog clip open, holding it next to Danny's ear. He suddenly lets it snap shut.
Mm-hmm. Having 40 winks, are we, Smith? Well, we'll have to wake you up a bit, won't we? Stay behind after the bell.
Oh, we
But, sir, I've got to get home.
You won't do as you're told, boy.
Mr. Snoddy stands at the window of his office watching the children rush out. Smiling to himself, he lights his pipe and puffs at the glass. Captain Lancaster stands ramrod straight at a door to the playground next to the headmaster's office. His face is set in a grim mask. Danny leans against the wall next to him, watching the children race away, his shoulders slumped in abject sorrow. Lancaster flings open the outside door.
Right, Smith.
Please, sir, I'll do any other punishment. I just can't be late tonight.
Then you'd better put a bit of beef into it, hadn't you? 20 times, at the double.
Danny runs out and starts to run around the playground. He races along the concrete and onto the grass, turning when he reaches an old roller and running along beside the perimeter fence.
Come on, boy! Pick those feet up! Come on! Hop, 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 hop!
Danny glares at him as he hares around the playground, trying to do his punishment as quickly as possible. Captain Lancaster stalks from door to door, watching Danny with grim satisfaction. Back at the caravan, William pats the sacks filled with raisins and looks expectantly out towards the road. With Captain Lancaster watching him like a hawk, Danny continues tearing round the playground. Danny looks over at the windows and, not seeing Captain Lancaster, he ducks behind a shed and quickly clambers over a high wall. With a final look back, Danny drops over the other side. In the classroom, Captain Lancaster crosses to look out of the door. He suddenly stops. Pushing his face up against the glass, he peers round, trying to see where Danny has gone. With mounting anger, he tries the door. It is locked. He strides to the next one and flings it open.
Smith!
He glares at the shed in the corner and strides towards it.
Smith!
Brushing past a tree, his jacket flapping behind him, he stops at the shed and peers behind it, looking for Danny. He suddenly looks up, realizing what has happened, and squeezes in between the shed and the wall and starts to climb. A nail sticks out of the shed behind him, and as he pulls himself up, it catches on his trousers. The headmaster walks out of the school and suddenly sees Captain Lancaster grabbing at the torn cloth hanging from his trousers.
Captain Lancaster! What on earth are you doing, man?
This isn't a school! It's a bear pit! Most disgusting shambles I've ever seen! I'm resigning. Do you hear me? As of now.
Oh, good.
Danny and William walk quietly through the woods. They both wear thick, dark clothing and their faces have been covered in dirt to hide their skin. Each carries a sack filled with raisins. As they walk, they fling handfuls of the medicated fruit out to either side, deep into the undergrowth, trying to cover as much of the area as possible. Both of them look out into the trees in the fading light at the pheasants, clustered on the ground, greedily gobbling up the raisins. Suddenly, both of them stop and stare ahead at the sound of the gamekeeper's voices. Danny and his father duck quickly into the undergrowth, trying to hide and make as little sound as possible. The gamekeepers peer through the gloom, listening intently. Danny and William hold their breath, waiting.
Yeah. What's that?
If they see the raisins.
Rabbits and his companion walk towards a group of pheasants clustered together. They carry double-barreled shotguns in the crooks of their arms. William suddenly picks up a dried stick and snaps it.
This way.
Rabbits leads round a group of trees towards the direction of the sound.
Stay here.
Doing as he is told, Rabbit's companion stands still and watches as the headkeeper stalks forward. William ducks out of sight, crouched behind a tree. Danny scrabbles for better purchase in the undergrowth and reaches out his hand to grab a root and haul himself deeper in. Rabbits peers through the gathering twilight and steps carefully through the wood. He holds his shotgun in both hands, alert and ready. As he steps forward, his foot lands on Danny's hand and he stands still, staring into the trees. William watches from his hiding place just behind Rabbits but can do nothing. Danny struggles to bite back the pain of the heavy foot crushing his hand, and they both hold their breath as Rabbits concentrates on the trees ahead. Slowly, Rabbit's look of concentration fades and his eyes dim. He turns slowly away and walks towards where the other keeper is standing, watching him.
How about this? I'm all for them.
What about 100 quid?
100 quid? Our lad won't be out poaching with his leg in plaster, will he? And I'm certainly not standing out here all night on the wages I get paid. Are you coming?
Rabbits heads off, and with one last long look into the trees, the other keeper ducks his head and turns to follow him.
You're right, Danny. I see your hand.
Holding his son around the shoulder and giving him a hug, William kisses the top of Danny's head and they quietly return to the task in hand. They slowly and easily throw handfuls of raisins towards a group of pheasants. The greedy birds barely notice the rain of raisins around them as they scrabble to find more in the undergrowth. Slowly, Danny shakes the last of the raisins from his sack onto the ground and looks up at his father.
All we can do now is to wait.
They both stare at the plump game birds and watch distraught as the pheasants fly up into the trees to roost. Danny turns sadly to his father.
Maybe it isn't going to work, Dad. Maybe there's something we haven't thought of.
Give it time.
What?
Give it time.
Danny watches a pheasant pecking at the ground. The light slowly diminishes and they sit on the ground, watching and waiting. As it gets even darker, William starts to walk slowly round where they have been sitting, looking out for the sleeping bodies of their prey. Danny remains seated, looking up at the trees and hugging his knees to his chest for warmth. Walking slowly, William also looks up into the trees. They follow the sound of the thudding as pheasants start to drop out of the trees. Suddenly, the air is filled with the falling bodies of sleeping pheasants and they have to jump out of the way to avoid them. Everywhere they look, pheasants rain down from the trees, landing softly on the leaf-strewn ground. They look at each other and all around with eyes filled with wonder and excitement. Clenching his fists with joy, William raises his hands in the air and shakes his fists in triumph. He grabs Danny by the arm and dances around, roaring with laughter while the ground fills with sleeping birds. On the edge of the wood, two cars and a van pull off the road and drive into the trees, stopping a few meters inside. William leads Danny towards them as Mr. Snoddy, the doctor and the postman all get out and peer through the gloom. Suddenly, Mr. Snoddy points in their direction and they follow Danny and his father deep into the woods. The doctor stares in astonishment at the piles of sleeping pheasants laid out on the ground. William watches his son proudly and raises his arms, sweeping them out across the piles of game birds with a huge grin on his face.
Holy haggis! It's epic!
They start to gently lay the birds into sacks, taking care not to hurt them. Mr. Snoddy taps one lightly, almost lovingly on the head and puts it into his sack while the doctor continues to fill his bag and the headmaster toasts himself and the pheasant from a silver hip flask. Back at the garage, Danny unloads the pheasants onto straw laid out on the floor as the others unload the rest of the sacks from the van.
That's the last. I can hardly believe it. Man, it's historic.
Oh, yes, I think it's... Well, it's a What are we going to do with them all when they wake up?
What do you think we should do with them, Danny?
Let them go.
Well said, lad. Danny, we've got to spread the good news.
Outside in the dark, William lights a fire on a small dish attached to a balloon made of tissue paper. Mr. Snoddy holds the paper, and as the air heats up and expands, the tissue paper stretches taut. Mr. Snoddy watches in amazement as the tissue paper moves beneath his hands. Lit by the flickering flame in the dish, Danny's eyes sparkle with joy as the balloon slowly begins to rise.
Okay, let's let her go. It's a good one, Danny. This will let the village know.
The doctor, Mr. Snoddy, the postman, William and Danny watch happily as the small hot air balloon rises into the cool night sky. Villagers step out of a small pub and stare excitedly up as the balloon passes overhead.
What does it mean, George?
Well, they did it. They got a lot.
A man walks up a path to his front door and looks up. His face breaks into a huge grin as he sees the balloon float past high above. At the same time, the vicar and his wife leave the church.
Lionel, look!
The police sergeant looks up into the dark sky and touches the peak of his cap. Early the following morning, the beaters gather at the gates to Hazel's property.
Morning.
Morning. Morning.
Morning. Check your names. Fred Purdy?
Yes.
Are we standing?
Yes.
Let's see.
Hazel's guests are gathered by the main door to the house, and a maid offers small silver cups to the shooting party.
What the devil does Hazel think this is? A wedding?
I suppose he thinks it's traditional.
Traditional? Punch and a shoot? Good God. The fellow said... I said... What? Morning, Hazel.
Morning, Lord Claybury. Charles?
Expecting a record bag today?
Well, we'll try not to disappoint you. Could you spare a moment, Sir Charles? Morning, Claybury.
Morning, Duke. What do you think of this? Punch at a shoot.
Exactly what you'd expect from a fellow like Hazel. Doesn't know the first thing. Shouldn't be out here at all this early in the season. It was a nonsense.
I'm impressed, Victor.
How impressed?
You're going to have a lot of local opposition. Old Claybury, for instance. He'll go mad.
He's mad already. No one's going to listen to him.
Perhaps. What about the village? Not going to be very happy about a new town in the backyard. Voice to the people, you know.
It's all in line with government policy, and I've bought out every acre I need.
What about this plot here? Garage, small holding, whatever it is.
Got it.
How much did it cost you? It's the key to the whole thing, or didn't the owner know that?
I must have forgotten to tell him.
All right, Victor. I think I can persuade the board. I'm in.
What's the best stand for the first drive, Rabbit?
Oh, the number four, mate.
Number four.
Listen! First drive's up through Homewood to the house. Everybody know it? Hey, keep the line straight and use those sticks. Right then, let's get on with it. Let's do as
the
man says.
The beaters head off through the trees. Each carries a long, thick staff. A pair of Wellington boots hang from a branch in a tree nearby, and as the beaters move away, they swing down and Danny jumps to the ground. Smiling happily, he quickly crosses to where William sits on a rising bank, and together they scurry away. Rabbits hands out the stands to each member, denoting where they will shoot from.
Number seven. Number four.
Good show.
More and more villagers gather together on the edge of the woods. Everyone watches keenly as the beaters begin moving into the trees.
Keep that line straight.
Come on.
Use those sticks. Get those birds up now.
The shooting party waits with growing surprise, and Hazel looks more and more uncomfortable. Rabbit's colleague stares around in angry disbelief as the beaters flail the ground with their sticks trying to flush out the pheasants. He twists a piece of string nervously and walks towards the edge of the wood where the shooting party stands in growing annoyance. As he walks onto the field, Rabbit crosses to Hazel.
Where are all the birds?
I don't know, sir. I don't know. Ah, there he is now, sir. Excuse me.
Rabbit strides across the field as his colleague runs forward. Hazel watches and steps forward. He stops and turns to his guests with a nervous smile. Suddenly, he starts up the field, heaving his lumbering bulk towards his two keepers.
What the devil's happening, eh? Where have all the birds gone?
I can't understand it.
What's going on, huh?
Silly ass.
Huh?
It's a sparrow.
Sparrow?
Sparrow.
Is that all you have to offer us, Hazel? One sparrow?
While Danny, William and the doctor drive back to the village roaring with laughter, Hazel strides across the gravel in front of his house to Rabbits, who steps out of the Land Rover.
Nothing in the lower cupboard.
What do you mean, nothing?
What? Nothing. Nothing.
Now, you listen to me. I can't keep them hanging around much longer. So find me some birds, or you can find yourself another job.
Never enjoyed anything so much in all my life. Oh.
In the workshop, the birds are beginning to wake up. Rabbit stands on the back of the Land Rover's flatbed, peering over the tall hedges on either side of the road. At the garage, a pheasant struts onto the ledge.
Oh, my. Oh, they're waking up. The pills seem to be wearing off.
Oh. Dad, don't shoot them!
They'll shoot us too, Danny, if they spot where the birds are coming from.
Bangs on the driver's window and peers through his binoculars at a rising stream of birds in the distance.
Pheasants!
The police sergeant cycles slowly towards the church and is abruptly forced off the road, crashing through the cemetery gate behind a tree. Leads the speeding entourage as they race through the village. The sergeant picks himself up and dusts himself down, staring at his bicycle angrily. The cars drive onto the garage forecourt, scattering pheasants as they screech to a halt. William looks around with a glint of mischievous amusement in his eyes. A pheasant lands on Hazel's car, and the large landowner shoos it away angrily.
Get off the paint!
The police sergeant rides towards the garage, a grim expression on his face. The doctor and Danny walk towards William as Mr. Hazel strides over to him, his eyes blazing with anger.
Well, well, well. I've got you this time.
Hazel, you're in for it now, my lad. Dangerous driving. Driving without due care and attention.
Ah, sergeant, the very man I wanted to see.
Hmm?
Why don't you do something useful for a change and arrest this man?
Arrest him? What for?
Don't pretend to be more of a fool than you are. For stealing my pheasants. There's enough evidence, isn't there?
Are you claiming these birds as your birds, sir?
Of course they're my birds, you blockhead.
I'm not so sure about that, sir.
You're not so sure about that? Well, who else's bloody birds do they be?
Language, sir. Please.
present moment, sir, these birds is on Mr. Smith's land. In which case, these be Mr. Smith's birds. That's the law.
No doubt about it. It's quite right. That's the law.
What?
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Hazel. Do I understand you still own this land?
I certainly do.
I see. My name is Charles Talon, the Premier Building Corporation. If you're thinking of selling.
Which I'm not.
Well, I didn't think you were. I'm afraid the deal's off, Hazel. And something tells me you won't be building your new town here.
New town? Hazel, what do I...
Shut up, you dodgy old fool!
Blast you. Blast you all!
Hazel blunders through the gathered crowd to his car, scattering pheasants everywhere. He flings open the door and pheasants fly out, flapping around his head. Shooing them away, he squeezes himself behind the wheel. The onlookers laugh at him as he reverses and they wave goodbye.
Excuse me, we don't understand the...
Well, it's quite simple. Hazel was never interested in pheasants or shooting. He was going to use the whole of his estate for a new town. Luckily for you, Mr. Smith here seems to have saved the day.
Not me. Danny. If he hadn't rescued me from the wood, Hazel would have forced me to sell the land.
Yes, I'd rather think he would, wouldn't he?
Oh, and it's three cheers for Danny. Banjo. Hip hip! Hooray! Hip hip! Hooray! God bless you, Danny boy. Hip hip! Hooray!
Hoisted onto his father's shoulders, Danny smiles happily at everyone gathered around him and raises his arms in the air in triumph as pheasants flap up into the air in the early morning sunlight. The end.